This week on Making Contact.
All my family is in turmoil because they don't know the kind of treatment we get here.
Immigration is the fastest growing form of incarceration in the U.S., with more than 30,000 detainees behind bars on any given day.
We have seen people who were beaten so hard against a cement wall that the wall itself was bloody when investigators went in.
Reports of rampant abuse and negligent medical care are widespread. And once again, politicians, lawyers, and human rights groups are calling for comprehensive immigration reform.
It's not fair for me to be alone.
On this edition, we hear the story of an immigrant family torn apart after an immigration raid in Phoenix, Arizona. And we report on a successful grassroots effort to change policies at Hutto, a family detention center in Texas. I'm Tina Rubio, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. For decades, Arizona has relied on the labor of undocumented workers. But recently, a new kind of crackdown on these same immigrants is tearing families apart and seeding fear in immigrant communities throughout Phoenix, Arizona. Valeria Fernandez is a reporter with Feed in Two Worlds, a project that brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio. She tells us the story of Kathy, a 9-year-old whose life was turned upside down after her parents were arrested during a workplace raid.
Kathy is an outgoing 9-year-old with an easy smile. She's looking at pictures of her family inside her aunt's trailer in Phoenix, Arizona.
Now, what are we looking at right now?
We're looking at photos from the years past.
Who are we seeing in these pictures?
Me, my parents, my family.
In many ways, Kathy is like any other kid her age. She likes playing with her cousins, running around the park. She even writes stories about princes and princesses. But unlike other kids, Kathy lives in constant fear of being separated from her mom and dad. That's because both her parents are undocumented immigrants. And one day, this past June, her worst fears came true. Both her parents were taken away after a raid at their workplace. Kathy saw it on the news.
We are told deputies from the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, they are currently executing a search warrant at the Lindstrom Family Auto Wash located on...
I found out because I was playing with my cousin, and I heard something about the car wash where my dad and mom worked. And I came and sat in the couch, and I saw that my dad was there.
Kathy's parents, Carlos and Sandra, had been employed at a local car wash for the past 10 years. They were arrested and charged with using fake documents to get work. U.S. law sanctions businesses that hire undocumented workers, but Arizona politicians and authorities have taken the law a step further. Instead of sanctioning employers, Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio is going after the workers. Arpaio is known nationally for having the largest force of sheriff deputies trained to enforce immigration law. After this raid, he went on TV to defend the arrest of Kathy's mom and dad.
I feel sorry for the young girl, but you have to understand that she's a victim of her parents who have committed felonies.
Arpaio's critics argue his arbitrary and inhumane tactics are making orphans out of children like Kathy. Since her parents were arrested, she's been recruited to be an advocate for other kids facing the same situation.
We don't like your attitude, Arpaio, mean and rude. We don't like your attitude, Arpaio, mean and rude.
It's 100 degrees, like, and Kathy walks in front of a stream of children crowding the sidewalk outside a jail in downtown Phoenix. They come together to march against Sheriff Arpaio's raids. Some are children like Kathy, who've been separated from their parents. At the front of the march, activist Salvador Reza is yelling into a megaphone.
You're gonna tell Sheriff Arpaio what you feel. I don't have to tell you what to tell him. You know what to tell him.
Reza is with the Puente movement. The group has criticized the sheriff tactics for many years. Puente is a coalition of pro-immigrant groups. It's calling for the federal government to revoke an agreement it has with Arpaio's office. That agreement gives deputies sweeping immigration powers. Puente says these results in racial profiling and violating of people's civil rights. Reza claims Arpaio has been abusing state and federal laws by going after undocumented workers who have committed no offense besides crossing the border illegally.
But right here, in this jail here, there's a lot of people that are here only because they were working to feed their families. That's the only reason they're here.
Reza invites Katy to speak to the crowd. A bit shy, she approaches the megaphone in front of reporters and flashing cameras.
That it's not fair what he's doing because he's separating a lot of people and a lot of children.
Since the arrest, Katy often came to visit her mother at the Estrella jail in South Phoenix. This jail was not designed to be an immigration detention center, but has served as one since Sheriff Arpaio began his crackdown on illegal immigration. The facility holds about 1,000 women. Most are pretrial detainees accused of nonviolent crimes unrelated to immigration. Arpaio's policies force Sandra to wear a striped black and white uniform and to be shackled when she sees her daughter. Katy is not allowed to hug or touch her mother. And that breaks Sandra's heart.
Lo que más me duele es que está uno trabajando honradamente y
le... What hurts me the most is that you're working honestly and you lose everything in a second. All my family is in turmoil because they don't know the kind of treatment we get here. My daughter comes to visit me and she's nervous.
Sandra never thought sheriff deputies would raid her workplace. The day of the arrest, she was vacuuming a customer's car when dozens of deputies surrounded the car wash.
Well, I was really scared because I was thinking about my daughter, that she was going to be left alone, completely alone, because both of us were working at the time.
At the time of our interview, Sandra had been in jail for 2 months. If you are undocumented in Arizona, there's no legal right to post bail. While incarcerated, she was offered a deal to plead guilty to impersonating a legal worker. It's similar to identity theft charges, a crime designation now being used to send people back to Mexico with no hope of gaining legal status in the future. Sandra took the deal and doesn't know whether this will hurt her chances of gaining legal status.
I think they're punishing us, so we'll go back. That's what they think. But there's so much need that you look for a way to come back, because you leave your country out of necessity, not because you feel like it.
Sheriff Arpaio brags that his jails are no walk in the park. He says no meal costs the county more than 35 cents. But his tough policies have cost him $40 million in settlements paid to detainees and their families over the years. His jails and deputies are currently being investigated by the U.S. Department of Justice. We tried to get a statement from Arpaio for this story, but he declined our interview request. While Sandra and Carlos are in jail, their family holds a car wash to raise money to pay their attorney's fees.
Car wash de donación!
Sandra's sister, Griselda, has been taking care of Katy while her parents are detained. It's been a struggle. She had to sell all her dining room furniture just to pay the legal fees and to make the mortgage payment of their home. As for Katy, she just misses her mom and dad.
I want my parents back. It's not fair for me to be alone.
Arpaio's raids have affected hundreds of immigrant families. As a result, a grassroots movement emerged in Phoenix, empowering people to deal with the raids before and after. In a small meeting room in a church, volunteers with the group the Phoenix Repeal Coalition meet with immigrant families to assess their needs. The coalition is training people to be prepared in the event of another raid. Katy's aunt, Marina, is part of the coalition. She says you need to have a notarized letter that states who will take care of your children in the event of your arrest.
Hay que hacer una carta notarizada. Eso es algo bien importante.
Although Katy was lucky to have her extended family take care of her, there have been other cases where children have had both parents arrested and there's no one left to care for them. Without a letter stating who will be the legal guardian of the children, they are at risk of going into the state foster care system. Organizers like Sarah Michaelbast are behind the effort to train these families to be prepared for the worst.
The idea behind the coalition is to develop a constituency for what's happening, rather than just have a bunch of people out there talking about what's happening, have people that it's really like on the ground affecting all the time feel like they can do something about what's happening to them.
But in Katy's case, her story for now has something of a happy ending. Her mother was released after serving a 90-day sentence, and instead of being transferred to a federal immigration detention center, authorities allow her to go back home, but with an impending immigration court date. It's not really clear why Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, released Sandra, but Sandra's attorney believes her lack of a criminal record and the fact she had a daughter to take care of played a role in her release. Whatever the reason, she's home for now. The day Sandra came home, family and neighbors gathered outside a trailer waiting for her. Katy ran when she saw the car. There was hugging, screaming, and kissing as the family rejoiced in being reunited. They sang religious songs and prayed in front of an altar to the Virgin of Guadalupe. Little Katy was nearly speechless this time. She was able to be a kid again.
How do you feel?
Happy.
Why do you think it happened this way? That she got out?
Maybe because Jesus said you're gonna go out, and maybe that's what's gonna happen to my dad.
A week later, her father was transferred to the Eloy Detention Center in Arizona, where bail is possible. Carlos was released after the family raised more than $10,000 in bail, and now he's awaiting an immigration hearing. That's why Katy's parents hope Congress will pass immigration reform now. It could be the difference between being able to stay in the U.S. as a family, or being separated by the border. For Making Contact, I'm Valeria Fernandez, Phoenix, Arizona.
That report was produced in collaboration with Feet in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School in New York. We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. The Immigrant Family Imprisonment Policy at the T. Don Hutto Detention Center, 30 miles outside of Austin, Texas, has ended. Hutto gained notoriety as a former medium security state prison, converted to detain immigrant children with their families as they await immigration and asylum hearings. After years of lawsuits and public pressure, the federal government recently announced it will no longer hold families there. Detained single immigrant women will remain. Correspondent Matt Gossage has been documenting the campaign to close Hutto since 2006. He has more on the successful grassroots effort that changed federal policy.
Almost every month for the past 2.5 years, these were the voices that echoed outside the T. Don Hutto Immigration Detention Center in Taylor, Texas. A diverse coalition of immigrant rights groups and concerned individuals have been holding protests and vigils outside calling for the end of family detention inside the prison. These actions and demonstrations have ranged in size from a dozen or two to several hundred since the prison opened in 2006. Hutto was officially called a family residential center, but this is no kid-friendly shelter. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, hired a private prison company to convert Hutto from a for-profit medium-security prison to a for-profit immigrant detention center for families. These families awaited their immigration and asylum hearings to determine if they could remain in this country or if they would be deported. When it opened, Hutto had over 100 immigrant children detained with their parents. It was run like the former prison it was. The detainees claimed they were treated as criminals, even though every single person was being held for civil, non-criminal violations. Hutto came equipped with locking cell doors, prison uniforms, and was surrounded by a barbed wire fence when it opened. Before public pressure forced improvements, conditions inside Hutto were very harsh, with poor medical care and nutrition. Denya, who prefers to use only her first name, was detained at Hutto for 8 months.
I will say, dear God, what I am going to do with a newborn here? He will die in this freezing cold. I was so cold, and the worst thing was they wouldn't give us enough blankets. I thought we were going to die from the situation.
Denya was pregnant while she was detained with her two young daughters. She fled with two of her children from Honduras from domestic and political violence. She sought political asylum when she crossed the border, and she and her family were sent to Hutto while they went through the asylum process.
So they tried to make the environment like a home, you know, but it's a prison, it's just a prison.
That was Karen, another mother detained at Hutto. Karen requested I not use her real name. She is trying to start a new life after recently being released from Hutto with her one-year-old son after a month in detention. Karen fled violence in South Africa and came to the U.S. seeking political asylum.
You are under 24/7 surveillance. You know, you have cameras watching you all the time, all your movements. I ran away actually because of the danger in my country, and I feared to be harmed. So all I expected was like better treatment. I didn't expect to be locked up in a detention that made me feel like I'm a criminal or something. Well, I know I'm not.
Denya and Karen's stories are not unusual for the hundreds of families that were detained. The families at Hutto were from over 50 countries from across the world, from the Middle East, Africa, Asia, Eastern Europe, as well as Latin America. Hutto is just one of hundreds of jails and detention centers that ICE uses to detain up to 33,000 immigrants on any given day, but was only one of two to hold families and children. Michelle Brane, director of the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children, was one of the first to investigate Hutto, and interviewed many of the families in the first few months it was open.
And then we would hear from parents who would tell us that their children weren't eating, that their children were losing weight. It was really a lot about the mental health of the people who were there. There was a lot of anger and resentment and frustration on the part of children who felt that their parents weren't able to protect them. And that is devastating for both the parent and the child, and for the relationship and the entire kind of cohesiveness of the family unit.
Before Hutto, most immigrant detainees were immediately released if they were pregnant or had children with them. Frances Valdez, the first lawyer to go inside Hutto, says she went to the jail when she heard the news that a pregnant woman was being detained.
And I would go out there asking them about the immigration issues of what the questions I knew I needed to ask, and they started telling me about the conditions. And so the individuals inside were the ones that really spurred the campaign in a sense, because they were like, hey, I can't be here, get me out of here, and this is why, and my kids are getting sick, and they can't eat the food, and I can't eat the food, and they separate us at night, and they yell at us, and they only give us 15 minutes to eat, and my children are really scared and crying, and it's horrible. That's when we realized, but you know what, this is a policy decision that was made by the Bush administration, and policies can change through political activism and through public outcry. And that's when we realized we need to get the public involved.
What started with a small group of protesters from Austin and Taylor soon spread. The national media became aware and picked up the story.
The treatment of immigrants brought out protesters in Taylor. Dozens gathered outside the T. Don Hutto prison yesterday.
In 2007, as lawyers worked on lawsuits to close Hutto, advocacy groups and activists began holding vigils outside the prison. They spoke out at public hearings, they protested outside ICE facilities and the offices of the private prison company which runs Hutto. Jose Orta became the local face of the campaign to close Hutto, known for his warm smile and familiar blue pickup truck at all the demonstrations. I interviewed him at his house, where he was going through the diaries he kept to document the campaign. He came across the first entry, but I walked to the prison to bring attention to the first vigil.
There it is, yeah.
So what's the date on this?
December the 16th was the walk. And this is the first big clip out from the December. As you can see, the barbed wire was still on. And I think that's when the lawyers were saying, well, we're going to do it this way, but you guys keep on protesting, you know, keep the heat on, and we'll do it over here. We'll nip it. We'll start biting it from different parts, you know, different pieces, and hopefully we'll shut down Tidon Hutto. And that became our sort of our rallying cry about shut down Tidon Hutto.
Protesters in Taylor say they're not running out of steam anytime soon. It's been 1 year since the first march on the Tidon Hutto Family Detention Center.
After following and being involved in the campaign for almost 3 years, I woke on the morning of August 6th, 2009, to unexpected news on the radio.
The privately run Tidon Hutto Immigrant Detention Center in Taylor will no longer house families waiting for judgment of their immigration cases. This morning, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency announced that...
While Hutto will remain open to detain single immigrant women, ICE has now transferred all of the families out. Those families that were not deported have been released from Hutto on what is called notices to appear before their immigration judges. Jose Orta again.
It was a victory, but it was only a partial victory. We haven't won the war. We have won the little battle. So we have got to figure out exactly, create a new strategy and a new plan, because ultimately we're all for immigration reform and we're all for the, you know, stopping, you know, for-profit prisons. But, you know, it's not something that's going to be done overnight. Tidon Hutto, I mean, it took almost three years to get them to realize that prison was no place for a child.
As of September 22, 2009, the last of the families have been released or deported from Hutto. The struggle will continue on the outside for those able to remain in the U.S., but at least Karen and Denya's family, as well as hundreds more, will be able to eat, walk, and sleep as they choose. This is Matt Gossage reporting from Central Texas for Making Contact.
Allison Parker joins us now on the phone. She is the Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's U.S. program based in San Francisco. She has expertise in immigration law and youth incarceration. Allison, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So reports say that on any given day, there are more than 30,000 immigrants in detention centers in the U.S. Some are asylum seekers, victims of trafficking, survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. There are also many children. Why is all of this problematic?
Well, it's problematic because the people you describe are ones who have already been victims of human rights abuse. For example, asylum seekers are people who are fleeing persecution in their home countries. Or the people you've described are uniquely vulnerable, such as children. What human rights law requires is that these populations should be detained only if it's absolutely necessary, and detention should really only be used as a last resort. The other reason it's a problem is that sometimes the experience of detention can actually exacerbate psychological harms that these people have endured previous to their time in detention. So it's really not a good idea.
What are some of the more serious rights abuses faced by people in immigration detention centers?
The rights abuses can really run the gamut. We have seen in the past, particularly after September 11th, actual physical abuse. People who were beaten by guards in detention centers. In one instance, beaten so hard against a cement wall that the wall itself was bloody when investigators went in. There have also been instances in which female immigrants have been subjected to sexual violence in detention. Other problems are more systemic and have to do with the fact that in many cases, immigrants are held in facilities that were intended to house people who have been convicted of crimes. So, for example, state prisons and jails. The personnel who work in those facilities are familiar with dealing with people who perhaps have violent tendencies, and those facilities are set up to house people who are being punished. But immigrants aren't being punished. They are, in some cases, going through hearings about whether or not they have the legal right to be in the United States. But the treatment that they endure on a day-to-day basis is treatment that is much more punitive than what they should have given their status as people who are not criminals. Another set of abuses relate to the conditions under which they're held and their need for medical care. We've seen in recent years literally hundreds of deaths in immigration detention because there just isn't enough attention being paid to the medical needs that this population has. And finally, another thing that we've been researching at Human Rights Watch is the fact that detainees are actually transferred between detention centers, sometimes in the middle of the night, with no notice. And what this does is it separates the detainee from the community that he or she used to live in, and often separates them from their attorney, from witnesses in their case, and really makes the whole process of their appearance in immigration court extremely difficult. The deck is stacked against them in the sense that they have no way to access their attorney sometimes, no way to bring witnesses in. And so these transfers between this vast network of centers across the country can really wreak havoc in non-citizens' rights to have a fair day in court.
So what are some pragmatic solutions then to family detention centers?
There are many solutions, and in fact, some are already being used by the federal government. And all of the research that has been done on these alternatives to detention have shown that they have very important success rates. So in order to understand them, we just have to take a quick step back, and that is ask, why are all these immigrants in detention to begin with? And the reason is because the government, the United States government, believes in each of their cases that for whatever reason, and there are many reasons under our immigration laws, these people don't have a legal right to be in the United States. And that means that they have to go through an immigration procedure where they may ultimately be deported. What the government says is, in order to ensure that these people appear at those hearings, we have to put them in detention, because otherwise they will have an incentive to run away, to abscond, to try to hide. What alternative to detention programs do is that they provide an incentive for the immigrant to show up for his or her trial and court appearances. Some of them involve posting a bond so that the person has a financial incentive to come to the court proceedings. In other cases, the government has piloted projects with community organizations who, in some sense, essentially sponsor the immigrant. Say, we vouch for this person, we will make sure that this person shows up at the trial. And sometimes that means they provide transport, or they just keep track of the individual by requiring them to come in, stop by their offices, and report regularly. What we've seen is that these projects are very successful. They guarantee that people will show up at their court hearings, but they don't require costly incarceration. And so we believe these are the pragmatic solutions that should be put in place instead of the vast network of detention centers that currently exist.
Allison Parker, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's U.S. program, thank you so much for speaking with us.
It was a pleasure to be with you.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Much appreciation to the Omnia Foundation for funding for this program. Special thanks to Feet in Two Worlds executive producer John Rudolph and producer Renee Gattel for assistance with our first segment on separated immigrant families. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.